meeting for June 16th, Planning Commission, City of Lapine has been called to order. We will now take a roll call to establish a quorum. Starting with my immediate left.
Gloria Fleming.
Dennis Davis.
John Thomas, Planning Commissioner.
Virginia Klassen. Present.
Okay, we have established a quorum with four of the five in attendance. And Gloria, will you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. Item number four, added agenda items. Now, this will be any agenda items that we will add to be discussed on item number 12 on other matters.
So you've got some information on weed and brush removal.
Okay.
I kind of want to talk about that a little bit.
Okay.
I was at the weed pull, so I'll talk about it then.
Let's say under 12, we'll say weed and brush removal. Anything else?
I had brought up fine compliance last time. I'd like to discuss that a little bit.
Which was it?
Well, last meeting, I had mentioned that I wanted to see if there was some ideas that we could throw out there to see if we could get some. It's been mentioned in the previous committee meetings that a lot of the businesses would like to see sign compliance, and I'd like to see what we could do to get that ball rolling. If there's things that we could do prior to actually coming up with the ordinances by enforcing.
So a little discussion on sign ordinances.
Yeah.
We have the.
It doesn't have to go in depth. I just want to get some ideas.
When are we going to talk about the signs?
Email. Yeah, because I'll be updating you under item 9.
Item 8.
I'm sorry.
So
I'll go under that. Yeah.
So we know. I'm going to write in there.
Just briefly.
There's a limited
amount we can do. Okay.
Okay, so we can put that in there. That'll be great. And that will flow right through with that then.
Good.
Sure. Excellent.
I just didn't.
More signs. And I don't think that Dennis, would you want to add anything that is not on this agenda?
No.
Okay. We have our added agenda items. We'll move to agenda item number 5, the approval of the May 19th minutes. And
there was a second revision sent out because Gloria was not at that meeting, and so we need to remove her name on the minutes.
That was the one revised on 5/13.
Mm-hmm. So I have copies of that too. I think you.
That's the one I got.
You did get the one in the. Yeah, I think your packets did
that's
have
the one
revised version.
Yeah, that's the one. Okay. That's the one I just read today. So. I don't have any additions or deletions to the May 19th meeting minutes.
I note that we accept the meeting minutes.
Motion's been made that we move May 19th minutes. And second it?
I'll second it.
Dennis Davis second it. Anything on the question? No? Then moved and seconded. All those in favor, signify by the sign of aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Ayes have it. May 19th is approved. Item number six, Battle Green additional text amendments. Has everyone seen through the emails the text amendments that Battle Green is thinking about? Now, I just checked the computer. Nick Lelak from the county has not, up till about 5 minutes ago, received a request from BioGreen as of yet. So we really have nothing other than a possible amendment to talk about. Okay, do you have any further
news on it? Just a reminder that regardless of BioGreen, are we making good text amendments that help our industrial zone for whatever kind of renewable energy might come in? And I always worry when an applicant like BioGreen is the focus versus the text for the betterment of the industrial area.
Right.
And so when we talk about those stacks being a certain height, we need to be sensitive to what that means for Lapine.
In the future, because once BioGreen goes over 100 foot, I mean goes from 45 to 100 foot on the structure of the building, they're talking about amending the zoning code to go from 45 feet, which is the new height. This is huge. I mean, we know that because it's going to affect the future. It goes from 45 to 100 feet in height on the buildings is one of them. The other one was go over 100 feet on the stack.
No, I think it was a certain height on the buildings. And then the stacks needed to be a certain height to meet DEQ requirements.
Yeah, they didn't have a maximum height. They just said to meet DEQ requirements.
Yeah.
I thought they had a height for both of them.
But we don't have this in our packet, so I don't know.
So we don't. We're just simply going to discuss this because we do not, BioGreen, you know, that would start out this historical process, has not, until tonight, applied for this text amendment.
Well, the question I had was, that you had mentioned before, which was, why are they asking for a whole amendment instead of an exception?
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct? I mean,
it would be a variance.
Well, a variance, that's what I meant. To something. And that way, it's based on the needs, and it's not like a
blanket
check that we say anybody can come in and do this, whereas we could say in this case because of these reasons we will make an exception.
Well, be aware that when the text is changed and you're spot on, it means that it applies to anybody in that zone, that everybody would have an opportunity to do that. But the practical matter is that an industry like BioGreen needs to have stacks, and they'll exceed the typical height for a reason. They're not doing it to put signage on it or something that is inconsistent with the use.
Right.
It's just that when you evaluate that, you need to look at the structure, and you need to look at the stacks, and the text needs to be presented, and I just haven't seen it yet.
Wasn't it already
decided the smokestack issue? I thought we went to meetings on that, and I thought that was the building variance is something new. But
in addition to the stack height, now one of the amendments is the building structural height, the actual buildings going from 45 feet to 100 feet.
First time I have to the staff,
Ben, Redmond, these other local cities, what in their industrial zones, and we might have to do some research before. Again, this is just a discussion because we can't come to any conclusion tonight. They haven't even asked for an amendment yet. But what's the heights in other industrial parks?
They vary.
It varies. 45 feet is typically what you see in a lot of industrial areas.
For building height,
and sometimes what you have is there are exceptions that are built into the code, and it says except for
mechanical
equipment,
grain elevators,
things like that.
You'll see those.
What they're trying to do here, and I think they probably are applying for a text amendment as opposed to a variance. I'm thinking the county's probably saying, okay, well, look, the variance criteria, you have to show that it's for reasons beyond your control, and they chose a site that has a limit, and it's going to be hard for them to show that it's for reasons beyond their control that they need to exceed that standard. Mm-hmm. So what they're trying to do is sell it on the back end that, look, not just us, but if you have other businesses that come in that want to locate in La Pine, this is a good thing, that you are raising the height limit because you're lessening the restrictions on the type of businesses that could come into La Pine, which is a good thing. But what Deborah said,
the only thing that I see, we haven't even decided what we want the town to look like. We want a lot of community input on that. Now, if you're going to separate and say the industrial site or the industrial park is not going to be a part of that, that's one thing. But if that's going to be part of the overall picture of the town, then we need more citizen input on a big change like that.
You do, and you need to see what's being asked for, and right now it's rather nebulous. Could I take a moment just to introduce our new city manager, Rick Allen, so that you all know who's here?
I've met some of you, but for those I haven't, welcome. There you are.
Anyway, so I didn't know, it just seemed that we should do that. So, but we need data from the county of what's being applied for so that you can examine it. And right now, it's all kind of loosey-goosey.
If they're applying for this much of a variance, I'd like to know why. What's the technical reason that they're doing that?
Yeah. There are several questions. So I think what we could really actually shorten this discussion by saying that there's just a lot of information we've got to get. One thing about this is that, again, we're really not discussing anything that's happened. It hasn't cleared through the county yet. And so really, you know, the county has jurisdiction, although they are going to favor our advice, you know, really, I mean, 99% of the time. They've already decided that. And so, one thing we will need to do, and this is what I agree with everybody here, is that we'll have to have I like just a meeting versus a hearing, but they can both serve the same purpose. But we'll definitely, when this amendment, if it does come in, we will need to have some public input on this.
Absolutely.
And so let's just tentatively plan on having in between the months, whatever, we could possibly have a special hearing or a meeting. We could just call a meeting that will be prior than our next July meeting, which is what? Our next July planning meeting is the 21st of July.
Well, John, if I could make a suggestion, since you're emailing Nick, you might want to let him know that when the application comes in, that you'd like a work session to discuss the parameters. And it would be an easier way to discuss the issues and find out things. It's before any hearings.
Mm-hmm. Work session, and then maybe a meeting or hearing after that, then. After the work session.
Whatever the county process is, but if you're wanting more information, you can do it in that style.
Well, on the email, it specifically, I think the way I read it was he was trying to give us a heads up so that we could coordinate that we would either the planning commission or the city council or a combination of the two would be involved in the public hearing. But because I think that they were foreseeing that there would need to be a hearing on it.
Debbie, in your industrial zone, you have an industrial zone, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is there two parts to it?
Mm-hmm.
So if you come up with standards at 100 feet or something, does that mean then that's the whole industrial? I didn't know if you took it and taken an area on a larger plot. In other words, on a.
No, I don't think so. I think we're all the same.
No, that's all the same zone.
Yeah. But you could, you know, if you have an area, obviously a power plant, which is ultimately what you're building there, they need big acreage plots. And so I just didn't know in and around the little 50 by 100 lots, you know, you're not going to find 100 foot buildings.
Well, right now there's no industrial zone under the county code. But you know, in our comp plan, so there's only one industrial designation. But through the zoning the writing of the zoning code, we could create multiple zones.
I got the impression when I was looking at it that you have lots of little curbs and sidewalk industrial, mm-hmm. and then you've got the big,
yeah.
and that's where you maybe mm-hmm. would have a different set of standards where you would allow 100-foot
yeah,
stack.
This is on a 20-acre parcel. We could designate a certain size, then heights could vary in certain sizes. The larger parcels would be farther to the east. Versus closer to the town on the west.
Couldn't you make those conditional uses? Or
You can do a lot of things to separate it and buffer it from more traditional industrial.
Do I get the impression listening to you that you don't want? I mean, just for the sake of argument, I mean, you.
It's not that we don't want. I don't think we have enough information, and it was shocking to see such. A change in a text amendment right off the bat. See, we're barely getting used to 45 feet high, and now they want to go to 100. I mean, you know, it's just very shocking what they're talking about. And
well, a power plant, there's no one should be naive about that. A power plant's going to have big buildings
oh,
and
sure.
big stacks.
Oh, sure.
So,
sure. And we do not want to, you know, to shut down any further development. Lapine could possibly be, and there's been some discussion on it, Lapine could possibly be a new industrial area for people because of the fact that the land's so cheap. And then what people are starting to say is that they could actually go to Redmond and Bend and everything and get kind of turned off by them, and Lapine could actually welcome some industries that are being shut down in other areas. So, we do not want to be restrictive unless we...
How high are your trees?
No.
About 45 feet.
Is that how high?
45 to 60.
Mm-hmm. I thought maybe if they were out there at 100 feet, you wouldn't see it through the trees anyway.
Let's get more data.
It was just kind of a shock. We needed to have this discussion to find out that, you know...
Mm-hmm. That we need to have a discussion.
That we need to have a discussion.
That's right.
We need to have a hearing on this thing. And you know, one of the other ones was to drop. There's a screening like a fence that goes around this thing that is that. What am I trying to say? There was a screen type of fencing.
Site obscuring
type of fencing. That they wanted to delete out of the zone also.
Yeah, that would be inconsistent with most of the things that we're familiar with.
I know.
One, from a safety reason, and two, to keep people directed, you know.
You know, for me, you know, I own this industrial plant. I'm going to want a security fence around my
fence if it's a power plant.
I mean, I don't understand why in the world they would
have to be
mentioned that they were going to delete that, that they wanted to reduce that.
That is cost to do a fence.
Well, it depends on, you know, where would they want this boundary. Were you requiring it around the whole property, or they want to maybe tighten it up to where it's just around what they worry about?
Yeah, it sounded like they wanted to get away with it where it faced residential areas. And
well, can we have you contact Nick and
we're gonna have to find out exactly, you know, where this is all coming from and if they're even gonna do it or not. I mean, we have, you know, it obviously was a discussion that Bowery Green had with Nick, and they sat down, they had this discussion that this was something, an amendment they might be bringing forth, and it hasn't, and so that's all it simply was, discussion.
Very cool.
So we can't get into any further than that, and I'll take care of item six. Item number seven, update on Regional Advisory Committee, RAC, RAC.
And Lee Smith has been appointed to be the liaison,
mm-hmm.
which is appropriate. He's the expert on the industrial lands.
And guess who's the alternates?
Let's see, Gloria and John.
No. Second guess would be Deborah and James.
Oh, interesting.
Well, we weren't there.
Lee does a good job. That's what happens when you don't show up.
I don't know if you guys knew that or not. I just throw it in there.
Who appointed us?
Council.
Oh, okay, council.
Interesting.
So.
Okay.
But did anybody hear Lee Smith has accepted to go to those meetings?
Yes, I know.
Did he?
Yeah.
Because those are from the news. Those are going to be quite extensive. Did you see the agenda, the two-page agenda on the first meeting? We had about 20 to 30 agenda items on the first meeting, so it looks like a long one. And so hopefully Lee knows what he's getting into.
One thing that's critically important about what this REC is going to do and the analysis of large industrial land needs, this is what this is all about. Examine the cities within Central Oregon and figure out where large industrial lots should go. Do we have an inventory? Do we need more? Where do they need to be to make the economy work better? And all of this will be revealed, supposedly, through this process. And I think it will be a good process. You need to remember that on our comp plan map, we have reserved acres and acres of land for potential large lot industrial development. I'm going to point that out just for a second, because I think it's important to have that visual, because you are in good shape inside the UGB when we talk about this area. I mean, this is almost 600 acres. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not perfect, but it doesn't have to be. So does Lapine have access to lands that can be converted to large lot industrial uses? The answer is yes. So just keep that in mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, BLM just doesn't know it yet.
Well, we're still working on the transfer. David Blair, I connected with him last week, and it's still rolling along. He's disappointed it's not faster.
Why is that going to the county and not the city?
I'm not sure it's going to the county.
Yeah. They're going to deed it to the county.
Yeah, the county
to
the city.
Okay. And I asked David Blair that way early on, and he just thought that at that time, now this is, you know, a little bit later, but he thought at that time it would be an easier process. Basically, the Lapine City wasn't up and running.
Yeah.
And it'd be easier to give it to the county first, and then let that city get it from the county in the future.
Well, that started well before our UGB process.
But you think now that it's in the city limits, I'm going to talk to David about that.
No, if it doesn't change the whole wheel, because it's in Congress, so...
that's true.
I asked the question early on, hey, here it does.
Well, I've been wondering that since everyone keeps saying, see it.
I know.
Well, originally there were several players that were vying for that plan too, or for that land too.
And they were asking
for input on that, and I don't think anybody, you know, I don't think it was followed through on. I mean, they weren't specific enough about.
I think it was just easier at the time to give it to the county, and that way they could get it off their plate, and then the county and the city could worry about it later. I think it was just kind of.
We've seen other BLM transfers start that way, but I don't think there's a.
Reason to do that. I just in the back of my mind thought there was something that had to be passed through the county.
I don't know why. They're both just a government entity.
Exactly.
But that other parcel is actually outside of our urban growth boundary. Now, if they're going to combine both of those, the other one was an 80 acre, I think, and then a 750 acre up, you know. The 80 acre is down there. It says BLM transfer to the rodeo.
Right.
I mean, or rodeo property. You see that one, Rick?
Yeah, that one.
Yeah, or down. No, left. That's Tan.
Tan.
Which one? Bottom left.
Only. Yeah. And Annabelle, point out just the north. Yeah. See, that's 160, and so they're not talking about south of 6th Street. They're talking about just north of 6th Street, so they reduced it from 160 to 80. You know.
Yeah.
So anyway,
are we giving them something in return? Is someone trading with them, or are they just doing this?
No, they're just.
They want us to make sure they don't have federal lands inside urban growth boundaries.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and Tony.
Well, if that's inside urban growth boundary, the city of Lapine, we need to push to get that given to the city.
Well, here's the point. I'm lying, but that 80 acres is outside our urban growth boundary.
Well, I'm talking the big one.
Oh, yeah, 750.
The big one, I've heard Tony say that it's going to go to the park and rec.
Oh, really?
That's all I've heard.
The big one or the rodeo?
The rodeo.
Rodeo, I think.
But not the one.
The 80, yeah. The Tony's one runs the park. It's going to go, the park, the rodeo grounds, I think, was.
And your comprehensive plan reserves some of that area for renewable energy. And not to complicate things, but if 80 acres could be carved out, and I know this is controversial in Christmas Valley, but not everything is going to be done that way. If you could do solar fields there on 80 acres, you would provide 5 megawatts, which serves about 850 homes.
What about the water?
The water?
The solar. We're going to write that right now and have a Supai County down in Arizona. Because people don't realize that water, solar plants take water. You know, and water's been an issue here.
It all depends on the solar plant.
Well, and it's...
whatever technology they're using.
Here's one thing. Let me make a real quick point before I move on to number 8, and that's that, Rick, as you're discussing this, keep in mind that other portion, if Congress has both of those properties there, and I think this is true, that they're grouped together, okay? Well, what I mean is the bill. Yeah. It's one bill.
There's three votes.
Yeah, one's a real small one. Isn't that the triangle?
Yeah.
What I'm trying to get at is it's one bill that has to do with all the properties. If it comes down to where they all have to be within the urban growth boundary, we need to get busy and get that 80 in their urban growth boundary.
If they require it, we would do an amendment, but they won't require that.
Because we don't want them to transfer part of it to the county, part to the city. I like to see it all transferred to the city. And the city will find, so that's where it needs to go. As everybody else. It's just a given. There's nobody here from the county, right? Okay, city gets it. Okay. So, we just got off the subject, apologize a little bit. Do we have anything on the regional advisory committee? Now, we're talking about, everybody understands this large lot deal. There's a little bit of competitiveness and a little bit of politics in this, and that's why it's so important that Lee Smith go to speak for Lapine when he goes. There's going to be bunches of members of this thing. I don't know, 12 or 9 or 13 or what did they say? It was
a lot of people representing all the jurisdictions.
9? Okay, and then this is very competitive in that, it's a state thing that has to do with the future of the industry. I don't know how it does. Dylan knows more about this allotment for fine. First, they're doing an inventory on this large lot deal. We've got a lot of empty large lots in Lapine.
And we submitted as a city our data to EBCO almost a year ago. So everything's all prepped up.
Good. So it's going to be interesting to see that, and it's neat that Lapine is even a player in this thing, because they didn't think Lapine would even have anybody interested, so they were just going to roll right over the top of that thing. And so it's neat that we have some participation in that. That's going to be excellent to keep an eye on that. Anything else, Deborah, on the...
Not on the RAC, which is also known as the... ROAA or something like that.
Right.
That's Bulbous Project.
Yeah.
The study was a $55,000 study by that outfit out of Portland.
The interesting thing on this, just so you know, is on the back end when they get done with this, reading through the scope of work and the products, is going to be, they're going to come up with a document that has these policies that show how there's going to be regional coordination and economic development. And that's going to be a real shift, I think, politically, because you have all the jurisdictions, not so much the county. Maybe that's what good that the county is doing this, because a lot of the economic development occurs, the industrial sites are inside the city limits, inside UGBs, is how the competition, because every city tends to look for, we're creating jobs for our community. So like a regional sharing of jobs and economic opportunities. And that's going to be the political challenge in the whole thing. So,
That isn't going to happen. But it's going to make people feel good.
That's what we're saying.
Come on, if you believe that, then you can...
I think if we just open, we have a lot of empty industrial lands here, so...
Frankville took West Farms headquarters to Bend.
Right.
I mean, come on. I mean,
we need to be... that we need to be wide open to this growth around here. I mean, historically, the pine has been, people move here, they got their own little paradise out here in the woods, and they don't want any industry, they don't want any puking smokestacks and all that stuff. But that's going to change, because they also complain about Southern Deschutes County being the poorest region in Deschutes County, and possibly in one of the poorest in the state in Southern Deschutes County. So we've got to start welcoming these people in this town and stop closing the doors behind us.
Do you feel there are obstacles right now? Because I see Libby doing a lot of things to encourage people. I'm not aware of obstacles, and one of the themes of our comp plan was, our doors are open, we'll do what it takes. Well, if we have problems of too many people, great, but we don't have that problem.
Well, I mean, the economy slowed down, and we were starting to roll there a little bit, and the economy slowed down and such, but so hopefully we'll have more advertisement happening in the future.
Yep.
Well, I think that is a little bit weak.
Okay.
So, but yeah, it's going to be exciting to see some new growth. Okay. Now, number 8 on the grant update on land use ordinances.
Yes.
And we'll throw in that sign.
Right. And we'll talk about that too. But generally, on the grant, we're required to do research, to collect data, to make sure that we understand what's happening locally, state, nationwide, and then prepare the TAC. And we feel our TAC that helped do the comp plan is good continuity for the new TAC.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've sent out invitations to them. We've talked with DLCD about doing something a little different. And the TAC before, it's a long drive for people to come from different jurisdictions. The housing people have to come all the way from Redmond, and the county people, they have busy schedules as well. And so our TAC representation was spotty last time, and we had to do a lot of stuff on email to get everybody up to speed. Well, as it turns out, I think we're going to be very successful with a combination that relies mostly on drafts of the codes, getting those electronically to the TAC members for comment and discussion, and then reducing the meetings so that we're getting a lot of work done more efficiently and in a telecommuting fashion. So,
the TAC.
Yeah.
What is it?
It's the Technical Advisory Committee for the creation of implementing ordinances. So for the zoning ordinance, etc.
Who is that?
They are agency members from the county or ODOT. Housing Works, all the usual suspects.
Typically the staff people, not the elected officials, but the staff people.
Yeah, technical experts. And so DLCD agreed with that approach, and we're going to try it out because I think it worked well last time as a stopgap measure, and this time we're going to focus on it more because really we're not talking about policy so much as getting into the details of the zoning ordinance. So that was the first thing I wanted to tell you. The second thing is, in the different types of ordinances that the grant covers, we feel that we should start first with the one that keeps coming up in conversation, and that's the sign code and lighting, and then followed by procedures. And then after that, subdivision, and then the others will fall in place. To that end, I gave you some concepts that I'd like you to mull over. Sign ordinance concepts, and that's in your packet. And it's a sensitive issue. I worked on sign codes from the very beginning, and in Bend, one of the things that gets people excited more than anything else.
What is? Excuse me, but I don't seem to have that.
What's in there? Was it more an extra one or?
The one that you gave us a week back from the little rat in the
book.
Oh, okay.
Just one hit one.
I know that, but it was something that was 24 pages. I don't have that.
No, I don't have them. But you should have this one. But what I want you to do is think about these concepts.
Mm-hmm.
And like I was saying earlier, this is something that the Chamber's brought up, Planning Commission's brought up, there's been sensitivity on the council to clutter and livability along 3rd Street, what to do about it. And it's a smaller ordinance compared to the rest of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to focus on this because I think it gets you warmed up for the bigger stuff that's to come.
Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, they can be highly controversial, but we'll take a pragmatic approach. I remember in Bend, when we first started signed code revisions, we all got death threats at home. And I'm not kidding. People just get really crazy unless you take it a step at a time and help people understand and get some support from local businesses.
What was that, about 5-6 years ago when Bend changed the...
There were three big changes. The last one was about 5 years ago. So these are concepts I'd like you to mull over, and we should discuss those at your next meeting or in between. If possible, and what I've done is give you generally the local observations, things that we've collected that you're all familiar with, and then the legal concepts. Just to go over it briefly, you can't control certain things about expression, and so sign codes must be based on three main concepts: time, place, and manner. And if we stick with those, we meet our legal requirements, and you'll be able to manage information and sign code elements effectively.
I don't really understand what you mean by time. A period of time, or like for elections?
When a sign can operate, how long it can be in duration, where it can be placed is the placement, and then the manner is size and shape.
So like if you go out of business, your time is up on your sign, so to speak.
You need to take it
down. So that has to do with that, too.
Political signs have to be down 30 days after the election.
In addition to time being a temporary sign, right?
So, you know, a good example would be 2 weeks ago in the paper you read about the new establishment at Deschutes Junction.
Yeah, I read that.
They put up signs and everything. And the irony is the signs that were put up would have, they didn't go through the permitting process, would have met all of the permitting requirements, the county's code permitting requirements. And the content of the sign is something that's never, was never even taken into, couldn't be taken into consideration. So they didn't go through the process. Those are the legal things that cause you heart pain.
Are you thinking about having a different sign ordinance for 97 compared to the rest of the town over on the sites in the downtown, because you may allow a Shell station with a big sign, and if you go over on Huntington, you don't want anything near that. So you may walk around, you non-plastic illuminated, you know, so I would keep that in mind, because 97, a truck stop, that's a whole different deal than over on Huntington, you know.
Yeah, you'll have different sign districts. It's the easiest way to manage it. Obviously, a residential area is different than the main street.
Or you base on your
code. And also, can it be certain material that it's made out of? Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Materials, do you have it, you know, how is it lit? Is it a backlit plastic sign, or is it no backlighting and it's lit from the front by projected lights? There's all those different things that come out.
Just to throw in my two cents, she was in Bend with 80,000 people, and it was terrible. I can tell you in Madras, where I was mayor twice, it is the most controversial issue. So of all the things you're going to do, don't take this one lightly, and realize that I want to make you, and I was talking to I think Deborah the other day, is that understand you, I want you to go through a few what ifs, because in other words, take a couple examples, because the first thing that will happen, that day will come, that sign's supposed to come down, or the Shell station becomes a Chevron station. New owner, new brand, and each one has a different sign. And then the first thing they're going to do is come before you, and they're going to say that it's a down economy. We don't have any money. And then what tends to happen is planning commissions and city councils roll over very quickly. It's the tough, the city manager matter said is the worst, toughest thing that he deals with.
It's so visual.
But this Chamber of Commerce will agree and sign off on the ordinance, and as soon as you go to enforce it with somebody that somebody knows, it then puts a face to it. And so I want you to know, this is one, be very careful of how you do it and everything. You got to have it, because I can tell you as a newcomer coming in, it's a clutter of signs.
Yeah. The one thing I'd like to see, though, too, is that not to disturb, you know, you've got some folks that have county-approved signs right now, and those folks should be grandfathered in.
Sure.
And not change them. Allow them to not have to change
what they have. If they are to county code, regardless of when they got their permit or if they got a permit. But we need to look at if it's county code right now. You know, I mean, you're a businessman. You've tried to go through the system, you've got your sign, you've done it to county codes, regardless of when you got the permit, because it might have been 30 years ago before it required, but now it's good. We don't want to go in there and start going up and down the street and saying everybody's got to change their sign now.
Oh no!
I mean, so
I'd be dead.
So let's, you know.
That's the real death threat.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, let's do it. People for no reason. I mean, you got to take this very one step.
It has to be very carefully done.
The way that, like, I'm using an example of that one mall. It's very difficult for them to advertise the one up by the little Subway sandwiches.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's because it's, you know, the business server are back.
Yeah. And it's a funny angle, too.
So, mm-hmm. I think, you know, we need to look at those things, too. I mean, the businesses need to advertise. So, we've got to be creative in what would help them.
And you're going to all have to get your running shoes on, because we're going to have some mobile meetings. Yeah, we can bring in illustrations, but we need to walk and look and really feel.
You know, let's look at this, too. You know, how many signs are we talking about? Pine's a small town, and so let's get some basics in the sign ordinances, some real nice, clean basics in the ordinance, and then just leave everything else to kind of as it happens, I mean, you know, and allow the variances. Because we're only going to be dealing with, you know, a couple signs a month, really. This is Lapine. You know, this isn't Ben. So.
Well, we'll have some hearings, too, to hear from businesses. We'll do outreach.
Yep. Yep.
It's absolutely essential the chamber's involved, but you know, we'll need to do
that's
notices
good idea. Let's
to all
have,
the businesses so that they're engaged.
Yeah, let's have a hearing and public meeting on signs, because that's a lot of people will come to that one.
Well, you'll hear both ways. The biggest issue is exactly what Rick said, which, because the first thing is, if you have an existing, you're not going to cause anyone just without any action on their property to go back and retrofit their sign if they're not doing anything. The other thing is, if you have new signs, they have to comply with the new code.
Yeah.
The other thing is, if you have people transitioning, changing business, do they have existing structure, do they comply and take down that old structure or put up a new one?
And the question I have is, there are signs out there that are not even in county compliance.
No, it's plywood, piece of plywood,
so,
spray paint.
I mean, and so...
You actually got spray paint on plywood. I mean, you know,
Yes, I understand.
And I think those people know.
Concern that you
those people know that they're...
Not in compliance.
They're not only that, they might be doing it just for spite. Those people need to be stepped on, you know, really hard.
But also, some of them, no offense, but some of them do it because they're startup business, they don't have any money, they're trying to make a living in Lapine.
You know what we can do right now?
And so, I'm just saying.
We can enforce the county code right now.
Well, see, that's what I was wondering, was when I brought this up, I said, could we have a county compliance officer just come out, look at Highway 97, give us a list of the businesses that are not in compliance?
John Riley.
I'm just saying, is that something that we can request and then get?
There's a question
so
that was never answered that I had before.
That currently you're not in compliance.
Enforcement officer.
We would like your input at these meetings. We would like to see if we can get you within compliance prior to. These are the type of things that. I'm just asking. What do you think?
There are two answers. One. You have to help people understand what's required, too.
Right.
So we have to have some education. But the second thing about having somebody come out and do an inventory from the county gets back to the question that James had investigated some time ago about where do the fees go that are collected from this area, and is there a budget at Deschutes County to accommodate our requests? And I think the answer's been no.
The answer has been, and your legal counsel was going to ask this question to the county, told me that he would take care of it, and so I butted out. The question was, they take all the fees from the permits to administer the permitting process.
Mm-hmm.
When they do that for permits that are in the county, part of those fees also go to code enforcement to enforce the code. But they said they weren't enforcing the code in Lapine, so the question is, they're still collecting fees on permit applications.
Well, they are enforcing the code in Lapine because they're enforcing one of my buildings. John Gradley paid me a visit. So they are enforcing the code.
Well, then that's good because they should. That was the point, is that they should be doing that, because if you're paying fees to them and the fees cover code.
Last September, Tom Anderson said it in that's got the minutes and said that there will be no code enforcement done in within the city of Lapine. Well, I didn't immediately go start rebuilding my back deck because of that. I was going to do it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But John Gradley came along, and to make a long story short, you know.
So it's building code
we're
enforcement.
We're working out building code enforcement, okay. And, you know, with commercial building and all that. So anyway, it's, he does occasionally come through the pine, but they say that there's no code enforcement. So I don't know.
It appears that it's selective.
Guess is, don't you suppose it's a nuisance, more bigger stuff than signs?
Yeah.
And signs are not fun for them, and if you know, they get to say what they're not going to enforce, yeah. Signs is probably one of them.
Yeah, and it wasn't signs, it was just...
Well, I guess what I was thinking was, it would prompt them to realize that this is going to be an upcoming issue, and that they can... And my next question was, because of the fact that we do have some small businesses that probably are barely making it, is there such a thing as grants and things like that, that as a city that we can apply for beautification and that
money to help people upgrade?
Yes.
Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, and also it could be possibly that we get a grant to fund this, but it's not just a here you go, it's like
that new
we
old business
like a low interest loan.
The new son.
To upgrade
mm-hmm.
or improve.
Mm-hmm.
I'm asking a question. I don't know the answer.
It's very interesting. I started doing some work with Central Oregon Intergovernmental Council,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of the projects are funded on grants, so it's amazing how many grants are actually out there that you really mm-hmm. don't know about. I don't know if there's anything particular to that.
Well, like when I was working for a bank in Bend, for example, they had an agreement with one of the local banks that it was the hospital, and you could get a low interest loan to pay off your hospital bill, for example. If it defaulted, it went back to the hospital. It didn't go to the bank as a default. And so what I was looking at is if we could work with possibly a lender in town, one of the banks, and say they handled the application process, they handled the administration of the loan interest fees, whatever, and it goes back to the city to pay back what was lent.
You mean it would be subsidized by the city potentially?
Right, and if it was defaulted on, then it would go back to the city as default, and we would have to But we wouldn't have to necessarily handle the whole process.
There'd be somebody to, like a clearinghouse. Let me say two things. You're embarking on a new sign code.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing is to let citizens know it's happening. Because if they're going to be spending money at all, they'll want to know that they're spending it right.
Right.
And you don't want to surprise people with a code that's already done and nobody knows about it. So we want to go one step at a time with education, public outreach, education, getting interaction with people and the businesses and seeing what their needs are, because we'll be flying blind if we don't do that. Your idea is a great one. It goes on the list of something that we'll explore,
mm-hmm.
but in the bigger picture, we have to help people understand what we want, and we're just not there yet.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to let people know and start getting some feedback.
You're right. I mean, and that's on the bigger one, not just sign codes, but for any development permits that come through under the county zoning code, to see how they transition into a new code that's being written. So you're not creating non-conforming uses or structures mm-hmm. the minute you adopt a new code. somebody got their approval 6 months ago, and then you get a new code and they become non-conforming. That's just not a good thing.
Rick might know this. I just have a simple question, like how far, what can volunteers within a city do? I mean, you know, live there all day and all that, but what can volunteers do? For instance, can a volunteer be this little part-time code enforcement person? You've got a county code, right? You've got a county sign code right now that applies to within the city of Lapine. Could we have a volunteer try to enforce the county's code, which is within the city of Lapine?
I mean, volunteers is simply how much you compensate someone. So that in and of itself doesn't... You can work for $1 an hour. I mean, you know, so that...
So with the city, I wonder, have a problem, and the council may... But they have a problem with just a real part-time code enforcement officer, just to try to start cleaning up some things in Lapine. Because we're looking at a year down the road, before anything's going on. And that's a lot of meetings and stuff, and people don't know, the public citizen doesn't know how much is involved on doing this. They think, you know, you're a city now, let's just get some stuff done, you know what I mean? So, you know, I myself would be willing to just go out and talk to some folks every once in a while, not a lot of time, I don't have that, but I go out and say, you know what, here's the county assigned ordinance, you know, we're trying to, within the city, and this is what applies to you, so it's something you need to start working on.
You know? I think maybe the best route would be with the chamber to try to get them to educate business people. That twofold. One is, this is the current code, and B, the city's working on a new code. And start to educate people that maybe...
Sit around some little flyer with the chamber.
They could have a town hall with them, but the chamber run is business person to business person. You're violating the current code, just so you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, and then this is some draft ideas the city's working on. Start to get people involved.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that the council would want to embark on just one element. I mean, the problem is code enforcement is a bigger problem. It's from the junk cars in front of the place to the signs.
Sure.
And I think one thing that
it is a big problem.
We don't want to probably do is head down one little tangent with signs, taking a code that we're going to get rid of in a year.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So you have to realize signs are a long process. When Ben phased them out, they did a 10-year?
Yes.
A 10-year phase out. So if it's 10 years plus one, as much as you hate it, this is not something that's going to be solved very fast. It has taken 50, 75 years to get where you are.
Mm-hmm.
And it will take years to get there.
Let's work on that then. Let's see.
Do the voluntary route first in the chamber.
Right. Let's see if Dan will put in some sort of a real, gentle flyer then and try to start doing some of that business-to-business communication.
Well, it could even be a discussion topic at one of their chamber meetings.
Breakfast meeting.
Don't they have some committees at the chamber?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we get them at breakfast time. That's the way
they... Maybe they have one that could take it on. I don't know. They have a bunch of
people.
Really
have your appetite.
Yeah,
that's... The judges.
That would be helpful.
Go
right before breakfast. Maybe that'll be a little weakened state.
So, give that some thought.
Mm-hmm.
We'll refine our draft.
Yeah, that's good. So you want to check just some notes down here?
Yeah, just give us your thoughts.
Notes, okay.
And then as we proceed, we're going to develop the outreach plan and some drafts so that people can really sink their teeth in and work with the chamber and other agencies so that we're getting the message up.
Mm-hmm.
We're also going to work on lighting because that is somewhat of a singular issue.
Mm-hmm.
And between the sign ordinance, lighting, and procedures, and then subdivision following that, this is what the Planning Commission is going to sink their teeth into.
I had mentioned at the last meeting about the putting the electrical wiring in for lighting, when I was looking over that list of things, evidently when any residential areas in Bend require that they are wired for lighting. That was my question. I mean, that would be a change.
Yeah.
And that's what we were trying to do, was identify the things that might be different. And I know you guys talked about it, but that's why I brought it up.
Are you talking about streetlights?
Yeah.
The monuments. I talked to, and I can't remember his last name, Tom at Midstate Electric.
Weller.
Yeah. And he sent me the specs of what they're expecting that this community follow. It's a little different than Bend. Here, the developer has to do it all. And whoever develops the subdivision must take those things on. So we do have a specification. So if somebody makes an application to the county and they have a question about it, there's a document that shows how it should be built, what it should look like, and the choices for the lighting apparatus. So Midstate's really being progressive in that, and that'll help us when we craft the zoning stuff too.
So you're saying in the residential developments now, the developer is required to put that in?
Yeah.
In other communities, isn't it, like in Bend, for example, a lot of the, like the over the Cobra lights that you see, those are all owned by the power company, they're owned by PP&O, and maintained by PP&O.
That's right.
Yeah.
You pay up.
Rather than...
Well, a lot of cities, the most of the cities, now, I mean, one is inside subdivisions, you have the decorative one just that you put up, but just a regular subdivision, if it's a big enough one, they have their own little look. But just around town, you know, often they're just a street pole type thing. But the city pays for those, and they pay a monthly rental fee to Pacific Power, in this case would be Midstate. The funding source for that, generally, part of it is franchise fees. We are talking about getting the franchise fees going here, but currently Midstate doesn't pay them here. But if you go to any other city, it's already a nice hour with the sister's manager Friday. They, of course, collect from CEC up there. And so that money then goes into a pot. They may take in $30,000 a year on franchise fees. And then 10 of that might go back out to pay for streetlight rental, if you call it. And they maintain it. They put the bulbs in, they pay the power bill, they take care of them. That's normally how it's done.
The main thing is, you know, there's a lot of people that have concerns about light pollution.
Yes.
These are all night sky compliant.
Okay.
So that was a good thing to find out.
Okay.
Sodium vapor with a cap.
Okay.
With the bulbs.
That was the biggest thing.
It's also quite surprising how small of luminosity you have to illuminate a dark street at night.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It doesn't take much.
It doesn't take much.
Yeah. Their standard for the one spec that we talked about was a 60-foot diameter.
Mm.
Local streets are 60 feet wide, so depending on the arrangement of the streets, you could get by with fewer.
Were these decorative poles? Yeah. Not in all, in some of the neighborhoods.
Yeah, they have two types, but they're focusing on a decorative pole that comes up with a glass fixture that's kind of old-fashioned looking.
Well, I can see that in the downtown, but if you just go around, I mean, I see these miles of streets out here, you're not going to be able to afford that.
No.
So.
No, it's going to be for new development, and I suspect as you guys develop a franchise fee, then the program can be expanded, but right now they're dumping it all back on.
Does the city have streetlights around town?
Just so mainly on Huntington Road, without the Ford Foundation started that.
Outside of those, are there any?
No.
There are a few, like at Burgess and Huntington, there's
it's
some lighting there.
It's
not
a city,
at the lit intersections.
City street
lighting.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. A few lit intersections, but that's...
Yeah, which is typical.
Yeah.
And they're banner compliant, too. They have a spec for banners.
There was some question on if franchise fees had been collected over time by Midstate, then... What have those gone to?
What's that?
You know, I mean, I know you're investigating that. If Midstate has been charging franchise fees for the city,
we don't know if that's
true. What I'm saying.
But B, if they did, they just are in their system as income. Mm. So, but that's a state. If they're doing it, it's a state law. All utilities are doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's nothing that these guys did.
Right.
There's a 3.5% that's automatically in the rate structure from the PUC.
That's state law?
It's from the PUC commission.
Mm.
If you go above 3.5%, then they raise the rate accordingly. And it's a 7% maximum.
Those monies just are limited to what? Streetlights?
No. That's a general fund income to the city.
Well, we went through this with Quest or whatever.
You have a franchise agreement with Quest.
Right, but we
Cascade
have
Gas, and the cable TV.
We found out they were collecting all this time, and
yeah.
the city wasn't getting the benefit of it, but I guess it was just being held. It didn't go anywhere,
it may be in this big pot.
Oh, no. No, no, but it's not going to be retroactive, and there's no big pot that you're going to go get.
Yeah, they were just
joining
us, so I don't know.
It's extra profit.
Right. Yeah, it's a good thing the city is researching that, because obviously Mid-State hasn't volunteered that information.
And then the next segment of ordinances that we've got under signage, lighting, would be procedures. And you're pretty much familiar with how processes work now. So this would be the formalization of how you would process a permit, how hearings are held, mm-hmm. What happens between a quasi-judicial and a legislative action,
mm-hmm.
and other permits. So it will be a recipe book, step-by-step process for each thing that could come to the city. And that'll be after lighting.
You'll probably be done.
Okay. And so that's all we had for our grant update. And did you want to move on to review of permits?
Yeah, let's go ahead.
Okay. So in your packet, let's see. Patty, do I have that? Oh, it's right here. Sorry. I keep looking at this ordinance or the agenda and forgetting that everything's all together, which is really nice. Okay, so the first one I'm looking at...
What am I looking at?
You're looking at emails that come from the county that give us a notification of Lapine's land use permit. So anything that's been applied for that occurs in Lapine. And it'll look like...
I just printed one out tonight because it was one that just came in this afternoon. Mm-hmm. So we didn't point emailing that. Mm-hmm.
So they have them in their packets, right?
We just have this one.
No.
They don't
have them in their packets.
No. Nope, never
have
them.
Oh, okay. Well, from now on, we'll probably need to do that and collect them.
Okay.
So I'm just going to run through these because you don't have the benefit of having them in your packet. I'm not seeing anything critical. The first one is a permit sign-off for land use compatibility for a Truax Corporation, which is a gas station.
Which is the one we talked about last.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'm going to go to the next one. And we'll correct this for next time. Lapine Middle School wanted to do a re-roof on their mini gym.
Mm-hmm. This is all made, right?
Yeah. It's not a big deal there.
Mm-hmm.
Next permit was a land use compatibility statement that schools typically have to do, and it was a permit sign-off. Again, nothing that creates a new land use or a new building. And then, let's see, there was a breakdown of activity, and I'll get this forward to you once I get home.
But those are old.
Everybody's getting those from Patty, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this one's just an interior remodel on the Lapine Community Health Center, the one that was printed out for you tonight.
Mm-hmm.
So the county's being diligent in getting you information.
Yes, they're doing a great job.
And there's not a lot of new activity other than these little things, but when something new comes in, then we'll help process.
If it's a building permit, something typically you want to look at, but you're not really commenting on, because if it was a building permit that was of any big issue, they would have required a land use permit,
right?
Mm-hmm. Along with it, and that's where your comments
are. Land use,
exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, building permits.
For example, if it would have been an interior remodel and it would have been, a 2,000 square foot addition and an additional parking lot, then it would have required a land use review, and that's where you would have gotten drawings, and you would have been asked to comment.
Mm-hmm.
Along with the permit data, I had Patty copy for you and put in your packet the June Bratton Report. This is one of the largest appraisal firms in Bend, and I want you to become more familiar with permit activity overall. It gives you an idea of Bend and other cities in Central Oregon. Lapine is listed in here.
Mm-hmm. I don't have that either.
Is it Bratton Report?
Nope, I don't
have
it.
It's not
in
here.
It might be underneath that one.
I think I paper clipped them all together, but they're all girls.
When did this go into the packet?
What?
They were just. I just had her submit that today so that you had some background data.
Okay, so when I called, you said there wasn't anything else here. I picked up my stuff yesterday.
It wasn't out in the black box. I just put it up. I just got it ready this afternoon.
Oh, okay.
About an hour or two ago.
It's just useful information, little factoids that I don't have.
There you go. I'll give you this one.
I'll pass it down. Thank you. Does this also tell me how much my house isn't worth?
I've seen this one.
Yeah. This is the LaPine single-family residence charts, and what's important to know is where the peaks are, where the lows are, and what's happening for sold properties. And I just, you know, it's just some late-night reading, but it gives you an idea of where we stand compared to other cities. And it's very useful when people say what activity is happening in LaPine. You'll have it at your fingertips. And that's all I had on review of permits.
Yeah, they do an e-publish of that every month, right?
I don't know. I've been on the service.
Yeah. We're all getting the daily permits and all that, and that's great.
Yeah.
Like you say, you may not see an uptick in some big, serious stuff, new construction law until that kind of picks up. But we will get some good practice in seeing these permits.
Well, I like seeing the median price go up. That's an important feature here, as well as inventory. When we get to 3 months inventory of housing or less, it's more robust. Mm. And that's the real trick.
These are just quarterly reports, though, and the fourth quarter being the winter time, so you have to kind of keep in mind climate change and different things. I don't really get too much excited about that from the fourth quarter to the first quarter. So we see something like from the third quarter to the fourth quarter of 07, it went up $100.
Yeah. Well, just hand the information to
$100,000.
There's one thing that is misleading about this. It says from LaPine, from MLS, for LaPine area, single-family residential, not including condos, townhomes, manufactured homes, and acreage. And I bet that 50% of the homes in this area are manufactured.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really going to skew the results.
Right. So it doesn't include manufactured homes and acreage.
So it'd be intact.
It's strange why they didn't include manufactured.
But you know, there's some bubbles of manufactured homes in different residential areas in parts of the country, and we happen to live in one of those bubbles.
Mm-hmm.
But the further north you go, you get in the Bend, and further north, it's less prevalent than it is down here. And so I think it makes sense, mm-hmm. for whatever reason, and to look mainly at stick-framed homes in most other places, but down here, it should be a part of a data set because it...
Well, we don't control this. This is just a courtesy
right,
that
right,
I'm getting.
Yeah. No, I know. It's just a broad, report.
I'll write a note.
We're just educating each other.
But it's good to
I just saw that, too. There was an uptick on manufactured home sales.
If anybody wants to talk real estate,
this has been,
Do it with someone else besides me.
Do you know why?
I
did too much.
Yeah, I guess they were.
See, I would have thought...
Well, no, it's because... HUD and Fannie Mae have gone back to financing them again.
Oh,
okay. There was a period of time about a year ago when they weren't financing them at all.
Mm-hmm.
And in the last 10 months or so, they've gone back to where they're financing.
Mm-hmm.
But they've got some very strange requirements, one of which is bizarre, is they've got a tie-down requirement for manufactured homes. When they get done with it, unless you're a midget, you can't get around underneath your house.
Oh, no.
It really is something to see.
So, okay, this doesn't cover, this price per square foot average, right?
So, John, what is it, Tony?
What do you mean, the
median price in thousands.
Oh, well, that's
but you know how they'll say your price per square foot.
Well, there are people advertising they'll build you a house on your lot for $30 a square foot.
Inside the house, built into inside the house.
Do you think it's really almost impossible to get a new construction loan anyway? I mean, that was what I was thinking.
You have to be, plus 750 credit score and probably, have a good county job or something.
Okay.
So,
The last thing I wanted to talk about is your budget was approved.
Budget was approved.
And so you do have funds available to start getting things ready for your APA membership.
Right, and that's, we're going on to item 10 now.
Yeah, and one of you should volunteer to work on that application process.
Yeah, we can apply as a whole commission.
Yes.
And then what I'd like to know is from APA is the there's a publication, a monthly publication, and I'd like to know if there's with that group membership, if there's several copies of that, or if we all pass around an office copy of that.
You can look into it, but I'm pretty sure they give you the number for your commission.
Yeah, if your individual numbers
is up to five,
then you will get one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a monthly newsletter.
And we'll be five with Linda, so. Yeah, that's what I want to discuss, is that I want to get that started, and I don't know how to do that. I need help with staff and the secretary to get us that application and get going on getting some, the APA membership started right away.
What is it? Exactly.
American Planning Association is a membership, and we can collectively as a planning commission, we can apply as a member of the APA, as a commission.
Well, planning commissions typically belong, you should belong, because it gives you access to the Oregon APA, the local chapter for Oregon, and it'll give you information about training sessions in your state.
Schedule training, conferences, state conferences.
Access to their resource library online, which is absolutely critical for what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And there'll be a, not a blog, but a listserv that you can contribute to. So if you have a question, you can talk to other commissioners. It's a very important thing. You must do it.
It's a networking of planners and planning issues. And it's the American Planning Association, but it would be, as Deborah said, the Oregon chapter.
Yeah.
So you're getting specific Oregon type of legal planning issues as opposed to, like, it's a good resource to find out what's happening around the country that may be applicable here, but it's very good.
And I had an application I went to, it was a couple months ago, I don't have it now. So I need some help with that. I can fill out the application. Actually, it's probably online.
It is. It's on their website, apa.org.
And one of the...
I'll fill out the application a lot, but see, I need a check. And so...
And then you'll do a check request
to
the city.
We need to find out what that amount was for that APA membership.
But it'll be on the website.
Yeah, you can just give one on call when it's ready to go.
And how do funding requests have to come in?
Anyway, right?
That's right.
It's within our budget.
Yeah, that's fine, but you can get prepared. Yeah, that's good.
When you guys, the councilors may know, within our budget, as a planning commission, how that funding is going to happen. I mean, obviously we have a budget, but how is that transference going to happen? Is Luana just going to be the one to be able to write the check, or what?
Well, we have to request funds, don't we?
Yeah, you have a budget, and
so
within that budget...
So then you request funds from the council each time? They meet twice a month, so those funding requests have to come in, prior to their meetings. So.
Well, I don't think they have to come before the council every time you want to spend something. I think it's over $5,000.
Yeah, we can approve it now.
So it's an administrative by the city manager.
Yeah.
So within under $5,000. Okay, great.
I think
everything that you requested was approved, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think as a courtesy, whenever we're requesting funds from the city council, they need to know. We need to let them know what we're doing. And why we're requesting their funds.
I think
they're
monthly expenditure report.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah. They get a record of every check that's written, everything's paid out. Every month they get a.
Okay.
I guess things will change with break. They'll let us know. But the thing is, you don't have to come to the council every single time.
It would certainly bog down a council.
Not really.
Every time
I don't think so.
$200. Well, it will in the future. I mean, not now, but we're going to start getting...
Well, that's true. Eventually it could be.
We're going from a small town into a little bit...
Mm-hmm. We might be streamlining.
A medium-sized small town.
Yeah.
two things related to APA. One is, right now is the time to do that and to sign up and get membership, because it's typically in about the second week of September, which will be here before you know it, is that they have their annual conference over in Eugene at University of Oregon, and it's over a course of like 2 to 3 days. Mm-hmm. And they're all-day sessions on a whole variety of topics.
There is a three-day conference, right?
Yeah. And so that is always good to go to. Everything from legislative update on land use laws to sign codes to, you know, all kinds of things. And the second thing is, one of the board, on the board, sat at the board of directors for the Oregon chapter of APA is Cliff Waukee, who is the chair, or was the chair, of the Bend Planning Commission. So you have someone right here local that has a link to the whole chapter. So
And that'll be great. Now, with the APA, or is it League of Oregon Cities, where we'll see statewide dates? You know, the APA is a national organization, but how does it get broke down into Oregon State? So that we know, we can see training sessions and conferences coming up within the state.
Two different organizations. APA has a local chapter through
Oregon. Okay, Oregon chapter. Okay.
And then League of Oregon Cities will also send you information as well.
Will that be done just with the one membership of APA?
APA, through the Oregon chapter, will send you information that they sponsor, different trainings and seminars and opportunities, books that are for sale. And League of Oregon Cities has its normal circular that comes out, and the city gets that and transmits that information to you.
Mm-hmm. And that is what I found, too, is that once you're a member of the Oregon APA, and because, again, it's a networking type of thing, that if there is another group, whether it's something sponsored by League of Oregon Cities, or there are private groups out there, too. The Seminar Group is a national company that will provide training on Oregon types of planning issues. The Oregon chapter of the APA will be really good about giving you information on a variety of things that are available through other organizations, too. So
this is the one that came up. For instance, this was the first half of the year. For instance, like say for next year, we missed the one that would be a really good one in Pineville, was the land use planning. It happened in Pineville May 8th. That would have been a real good one for this year. So what we need to do is make sure this publication gets to the Planning Commission, as well as the new APA membership. It'll probably come in to, you know, the City Hall.
Mm. Oh, that is a good one.
Yeah. And then, we just need to get up to speed on this training. And
if individual copies come in, will they probably come to City Hall, and then I'll just put them in a black box or something for people to pick up?
Yeah, I would scan them and then just send them out. It would be easier for you.
Oh, okay.
There's also a publication called Local Focus. It comes through the League of Oregon Cities. It's a monthly publication called Local Focus. It would be good to get both of those publications into us. And then any other... any other discussion on future planning commissioner training that staff may have?
Well, of all the things that are going to come to you, learning how to craft codes and implement the codes is going to be the most important thing.
For this year.
You can't learn that in a class. You have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to have intensive training, which will be a byproduct of creating these codes.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of next year, you're going to know more about how codes are formed and function and are administered.
Like
most of the planning commissions that have been in place for a long time, because they don't go through from step one to the
right. And the codes are already there.
It's going to be immensely helpful to you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Immersion training.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's great. I mean, it's excellent. You guys all have to balance when you hang in there. I mean, I as well.
That's why instead of water, we'll be having Red Bull.
That's great. Okay. I'll get on the website, Patty, and I'll
I'll give you, I'll fill out the application. I don't know if each, if this individual has to sign it or what, or just provide names to the thing.
If you want to email it to me, then
I think they just want maybe a number. I can't remember. It seemed like the application had information on each person, but if we do that, we'll get that.
Yeah, it's really straightforward.
We used to sign up for planning commissions every year. Yeah. We'd renew their, yeah, we'd give them information.
So we'll do that. We'll work on that. Have that done by next month. And now 11, Planning Commission reports and staff updates. Any meetings, anything the Planning Commissioners have gone to?
Utilities Committee. Just to update you that they're reviewing various expenses that would be taken on by the city, for example, insurance. They determined that we're still getting some more information from Art Euchre, who's in charge, but unfortunately, the representative from our current utilities,
Barban,
was requested by her board to step down and resign. So, I don't know exactly when that's going to leave. I think they were looking at discussing with the water and sewer districts if there might be something that could be done that would encourage them to continue participation. Mm. I think their biggest objection was that they did not have a voting member on the committee. So, unfortunately. So, I will be going to that meeting tomorrow. And I'll let you know what I find out.
Do we have council direction on that? Is there a strong policy from the council on what the city should do in encouraging the transition from the sewer and water districts? I don't know.
I think this committee is specifically designed to determine whether or not it's feasible at this time and at what pace that the absorption would take place if it does.
I think.
Go ahead. No.
I think there's options.
Yeah.
Options. That's what we're exploring. Options.
Okay.
Funding, feasibility, everything. Mm-hmm. Like utility commissions, everything.
Yeah, and Deborah, that is going to be our work session at council meeting next week.
This week?
Yeah, is that Rick's going to be talking about that resignation.
Okay.
See what
the
is it true that both of those districts have always been the black?
What?
They've always been the black financially.
That I don't know.
I mean, that's what I've always heard.
You would hope so.
they're in the process of paying off a huge loan too.
So. And also there's the consideration of
one of their budgets is larger than the city of La Pine.
Taking on the employees, and would the city have to change current benefits for existing employees to match theirs?
I can't remember the sewer or water, but their budget was about $400,000 or $500,000 more than the city of La Pine.
The utilities, they have to have those huge budgets because they have that huge contingency funds. Because if something were to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense.
And in the down economy, the last thing you will get rid of is water and sewer service to your house.
Well, the one thing that I was going to comment on was I was reading, since we're considering this, and I'll be at the meeting tomorrow too, but is the fact that ironically, I was reading in the paper that, it was in the editorial page, but the chamber president of Bend he's in favor of them going, the Bend ones going private. So here we are determining whether we. I'm sure it is. I'm just thinking.
Okay. Somebody else take one into a private?
That's one of the options they're considering. And they're, because of the budget and stuff.
Okay.
But they found that a lot of those privatization of the waters are foreign owned.
Yeah.
Initially, all that stuff was public because of public health. And now there's a discussion nationally as to whether those services are cheaper if you privatize them, or if they're still run by the public. If they're more efficient, privatized, or run by the public. And there's, I've not read anything anywhere that shows that there's any clear leaning one way or the other. I mean, there's no clear results one way or the other. I think in some areas, in some municipalities, privately it's done cheaper and better for whatever reason. Maybe it's the people who are running it.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many variables involved with it. And so when people make blank statements like we ought to privatize this or we ought to publicize that, it's just like any other generalization.
Mm-hmm.
It's not worth much, say.
Mm-hmm.
But that's really where the argument comes from. That's why I'm sure they're in Ben, they're talking about it. They're trying to see if they can save money.
Oh, yeah, and a lot of other stuff about, you know, outsourcing all the services and all sorts of good stuff.
Well, and also, I was going to mention the one item that Barden brought up was that they were very close to signing the agreement with Viabrine for the water service.
That's interesting.
So it was at the attorneys, and if their attorney got it and approved it, then it would have been, it would be signed.
And that's a water issue too.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot of water.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But they weren't the ones that were talking about using effluents from instead of having it sprayed over the.
Using some local food.
Yeah.
Good. Very interesting.
Anyway, that was my report.
Okay. Let me add something to that, just give you guys something to think about. You know, I'm a developer coming in Lapine, and it's certainly for me as a developer coming in Lapine, it'd be a lot easier to deal with one stop on my water and sewer issue, building planning, you know, zoning and all that, rather than to go over to the water district, you have to deal with them, get approval of them, work with the city, planning. You know, it just seems like which process would be, if it was run right, which process would be more expeditious than the other?
And that's the key. How is it run? In Bend, my clients deal with both. Between Avion Water and City Water, I've had equal responsiveness. So,
because they run good, and what the city does is through the development process, is it requires, if you're doing something, it's a city service, that it gets approved by the city.
Yeah.
If it's in Avion, if it's approved by Avion, and then you submit information back to the city showing that they approve whatever you designed. Yeah. So it is an extra step.
Yeah. In both Los Angeles and Las Vegas, the water systems there are run by public agencies, but they're not directly affiliated with the city.
Mm-hmm.
And Las Vegas is the Southern Nevada Water Authority that takes care of a whole slew of districts around that area. And the Metropolitan Water Authority in Los Angeles takes care of that. They're not city functions at all. Mm-hmm. But the cities in both cases run the sewer plants. So it's kind of like how they grew up and what was in place at the time and what got started.
Mm-hmm. Water is a fascinating history.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
There's a neat book about that called Cadillac Desert.
Yes,
yeah.
That's a wonderful book.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they talk about all those water fights and how all that stuff came to be.
Maybe Chinatown.
Yep.
Yeah. So. Any other planning commission reports and staff update?
I just wanted to follow briefly.
You're 3.5 hours, isn't
it? Oh, wait. You didn't get to talk, did you, Gloria?
I don't have anything yet.
I'm
under other matters.
Back to solar just for a second. I work with a solar company that's going to be putting in a field in Crook County. And they're not water dependent. They have a different system. And they'll provide 5 megawatts serving 850 homes. And I just wanted to let you know that there's real data, real companies that use something that's much more environmentally conscious.
Which technology are they using for that, do you know?
Oh.
The photovoltaic?
It's PV, and the company is EN and R. And if you're interested, I'll link over their website to you.
Yeah,
I'd like that too.
Would you?
Yeah.
Okay.
You want to say you guys name the people?
The ones we're using down in Arizona and in the Mojave Desert. Those use a liquid runner in front of a convex mirror. And the convex mirror heats the liquid, and the liquid goes in and creates the heat off the water that runs the turbine, and that's why they run water. These photovoltaic is basically a process where the sun hits it and you get electricity out of it.
Well, I was shocked when I found out that, you know, it took so much water. And it's a real political issue down there. I mean, they've got Congress and senators and everything involved in it. And
it has to do with efficiencies of how they work. The ones that use water are much more efficient. Mm-hmm. You get more bang for your buck. And the other thing is they're very close to a technical breakthrough that allow them to store that heat overnight and use those plants at night. Whereas with photovoltaic, when the sun goes down, unless you've got a battery hooked up to it, it doesn't say anything, see?
Cool stuff?
Yeah, very cool.
That's all we have.
Okay.
Okay, well, on other matters, you're still here. I was involved with the loophole, and I was talking to the fellow that's in charge of the noxious weed thing for the whole county. And I mentioned about, you know, working on ordinances. And he said that Sisters had a very simple one. And he said it works very well. And it's very easy to, you know, to implement. And I don't know exactly what it is. I guess it's in here. This is not the ordinance. I mean, there's...
Chapter 8.
Let me take a look at it.
There's...
How to control not that weeds?
I just went on the web and did some quick surfing and found that.
Is there a place where you can find out what is a noxious weed?
Yes.
There's signs everywhere that say control noxious weed.
Yes.
And I found one listing that had, it must have 1,000 plants on it. And I mean,
there is one that has, you know, the noxious weed. It's older. I think it's Forest Street. Forestry Department.
Yeah, I thought so too. Bend has some brochures that they hand out to people.
Right.
Let me see the next time I'm in Bend if I'll pull some.
The county has some too.
The chamber might even have them.
Yeah, if they've got them, we need to have a stack here for people.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so we need to get those.
And that was the other thing too. I was talking to somebody that worked for the forestry, and she knows all the Latin names for all the weeds and the flowers that are spotted down. Yeah, there's a lot of good plants. I mean, I pulled up a few. This is a weed. Oh, that's a good one.
That's why
we had one couple that had moved here 2 weeks ago, and they said they came to the weed pool just so they could find out what weeds to pull in their yard.
Oh, man.
She said she was going to compile, or she said there was a list that was available on the computer of the good plants, because we had talked about trying to encourage native landscaping. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing that we should have here. But he was saying, you know, with Sisters, it's a matter of sending a couple of letters, and if somebody has to spot it, mm-hmm. and then sending a couple letters, and if they don't clean it up within a reasonable period of time, mm-hmm. they go ahead and clean it. I mean, they tell them, and they go ahead and clean it up and send them the bill. Mm. If they don't pay it, they put it on their taxes.
Yep.
We have one particular unique problem to this area, and that's deer brush. And if a lot of these lots that have been vacant for a number of years or that are not maintained have a lot of deer brush, and deer brush is considered to be a natural landscaping plant, but it's also got volatile oils in it, and if it gets in a fire, it gets a real high flame from it. And so there has to be some practicality as to how much of that you can leave in and how much needs to be taken out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
some places are bad. You go by them and you know if they've got a fire in there.
Yeah.
It's going to be tough.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, that was two sides of it, and I thought it was kind of interesting, you know, to look at. And
well, if you can get people educated what it looks like,
mm-hmm.
then you can eradicate before it creates seeds.
Right.
And that's a real critical time period. Most of the time people say, hey, look, I've got Russian knapweed in my yard. What do I do? It's too late. They've already produced the seeds. So you have to do some other mechanical things.
The other thing is, you know, my thinking is whenever we put in an ordinance like that, would also like to look at, we have a lot of elderly people, we have a lot of people that can't afford to have, you know, hired somebody, or they can't do it themselves. I'd like to see in our ordinances some way that these people could say, you know, I would like to do it. I want to comply, but I can't. And, you know, some kind of resources that would help those kind of people. Through the community churches, through, yes. You know, I mean, if we could work together with other groups to kind of help those people out.
Scouts, I mean, they all help.
And it may be that, for example, like when they had the Pull Together Day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But there are like organizations like that Volunteer Connect that was at the volunteer
right.
organization mm-hmm. that they actually, if they had people in a certain area that wanted to say, can we have like the scouting groups come through? And they go to that organization and look for activities that they right. can actually do. So it may be if we, you know, the city would sponsor it and then put it on there that people could.
Well, if the city could just list what they think would be viable philanthropic efforts,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. then you've got the scouts, the Girl Scouts. I mean, all
right.
these people, they would know what this community needs. Until we do that, I guess people might be guessing.
That's a good place to start.
Yeah.
You know, let's get, you know, get it on the website or something.
Yeah.
You know,
which, you know, that's a council thing.
Well, I just, you know, I can see with a lot of these ordinances, I would like a way out for people that have a hardship.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
we
right.
do have a lot of people that have that.
Yeah, you can't
here, so.
You can't just go pull Mrs. Jones weeds and send her a bill for $300 when
uh-huh.
she makes $700 a month. I mean,
right.
you're not going to do that.
That's a good point.
So I just so. Want
but
to.
But I will say that
yeah.
one of the worst places I saw was one of our utilities last year. Behind their fence. And I thought, gosh, you know, maybe somebody would want to go pull their weeds so that they could pay their water bill.
Community service.
They
were
prisoners,
they were doing community service. Maybe they just didn't go to school one day.
Yeah, I mean, there may be a source there. Maybe
yeah.
we could
oh, yeah, sure.
keep
yeah.
the van load of them coming out.
There's also an outreach program with the prisons.
We
have convicts
yeah.
We have a community cemetery that our family belongs to, and they get the prisoners, they come through twice a year and clean the cemeteries out.
Sure.
And those guys want to get out and do something. So that's
mm-hmm.
something that you might be able to
I wouldn't want it to just be a thing, you know, but if people have a valid reason for not adhering to it.
Yeah, we could definitely put those on the list to have the volunteers
right.
and hit that one. And then,
yeah.
yeah.
And there's a
good
idea. Fire Free has millions of dollars that they pour into the county.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then
oh, yeah.
there's a lot of benefit to that.
Yep. There it is.
The Fire Free Zone?
That just came on this year.
I think it's a six, I forget. It's a perimeter that is required around houses
mm-hmm.
in urban areas.
Right, right.
In rural areas, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
And they provide resources for people who can't afford to do it themselves.
Well, the BLM has spent a lot of money this year on boundary cleanups.
Mm-hmm. That's all I have.
Yeah, I don't have any. I just attended the last council. They seem to be really moving on along now. You know, there's going to be a lot of changes, and they seem to be on the right track. Any complaints? I think we're going to be moving on. You know, it's just great. I just want to emphasize that all this training is great because, you know, the economy will pick up in these years. And I think that this is just a wonderful time for us to really, you know, train. And then because I can see, you know, the planning being a part of La Pine City, the permits starting to come in, new structures being built. And then along the new structure, the new compliance to the new code, all cleaned up. you know, the sidewalk, nice parking areas. I mean, it's going to be wonderful to see what kind. Right now, we kind of seem to be spinning our wheels a little bit. Not doing much as a planning commission other than setting a lot of foundational work down and a lot of groundwork. And that's going to come in big time handy.
It's very valuable for you.
It's essential. Can you imagine if we, right now, if this was 2005, 2006, right now, as a planning commission, there's hundreds of permits, and La Pine was building like crazy, and we would be...
But your foundation includes an understanding of things that most planning commissions don't have the ability to do.
Really?
Which is, at the ground level, develop your livability standards through the comp plan. Yeah. And it seems like, well, yeah, we did that, what's next? But that is huge.
Oh, it is.
And that background's never going to leave you. So yeah, you'll be using that. Should you get a crush of application permits and you didn't have a code and the county was out of the picture, you know what to do because you have those basic standards in place. So I don't think I'd worry at all. You're in great shape.
Yeah, we are. Yes, we are. It's going to be great.
You know, just conversation. I'd still like to see some things more done on town concept, you know, on what people, how they perceive their client and what they would like. You know, trying to get more people involved in that.
So kind of an update on that public comment period that we went through, the comp plan, just a new update, because that was a couple years ago now.
There's been some groups that have kind of skirted around the town center concept.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'd like to see some things happening with that as far as getting, you know, some input from a variety of people, because that will help us in trying to develop our ordinances and things, too.
Okay. One thing I'm going to do, and I used to bring it all the time, and then I got tired of lugging it around, was my personal collection library that has all these wonderful visuals about town planning, mixed-use planning, things I've collected over 20 years, stolen from James. And, you know, I want to bring that in sometime and take 5 minutes, walk you through it, so you know what's available. And if you need the loan, you wanted to borrow one of those books just to bring yourself up to speed on a certain issue, I'd love to lend them to you. I think that's the first start until you guys build your own library. And remember, your budget includes data for your own library. So yeah. I've got things that will just wow you. It's a book called Great Streets. It's how you can make streets look wonderful in your community. And a lot of times that's the first place you start is with pedestrians.
Mm-hmm. So. It's interesting. I remember you were at our very first meeting that we had on our comp plan process, and one of the first tasks that we had was to revisit the visioning process that had been done a couple years ago and do kind of a revised, okay, are those still valid and what other new ideas are there? That would be a good, I guess, place or part of a meeting to start as we move into the zoning code. Here's how we get to the comp plan. Here was the visioning. Is that still valid?
Yeah, and some of those people that had that original visioning and were involved in that, it'd be nice if they would come, you know, too. But there's a lot of new people that are getting involved, too. So I'd like to see us do some more things along that. So that everybody has kind of an idea of what we want La Pine to look like.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about it. We want the small town feel and all that. But as far as really visioning
the next steps,
through advertising, Patty, in our next month in July's meeting, let's use a little creative advertising to get some members of the public here to do just that.
One thing that is part of the grant that we're required to do is public outreach.
Mm-hmm.
And as we start having meetings on the sign code, we can say, this is a component of preserving and enhancing livability. Please come to this meeting because this is one element. And we can get some people involved in the process, too. It's nice to have people come in and say, yes, we want our livability to do this, but I want to put them to work and say, here's what it means.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think the sign code's going to be one where you're going to fill the room.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's good.
Yeah.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
That's, we could put that, you know, in any things, I mean,
we're building next July's agenda, or next month's agenda in July, so we're on the agenda.
And our meeting will be the
21st, I think it's July.
So we're going to start on Senko next month?
No.
No.
There are public noticing requirements and things that I need to adhere to, and I need you to think about the concepts in the handout first.
Yeah, we're doing that first.
And then get back to me, and then I can start talking about our draft and how we present that to the public.
Okay.
And I don't want to jump that until...
No, I don't either, and that's why I was wondering, because I'm like thinking.
Because we need to talk to the chamber, I need to talk to agencies, I need to make sure that you know, we have time with the people who will support us, and I've got to build some lobbying here too. Otherwise, it's, oh my God, there's, you know, something new.
It is, but as you take it back to the scope of work that we have under the grant too, is that there are deliverables at certain times, and it's funny, the scope says prepare drafts of everything, sign code, the lighting ordinance, the procedures ordinance, subdivision code, the zoning code, but I think what Deborah and I talked about is, well, you can't just bring those all to the public, so which is the one that you bring first?
Yeah.
It's
right.
Typically the one that's the most controversial because you spend the most time on it. So,
yeah, and we get those people engaged for the
working, basically just written drafts of these codes, very basic, but...
Well, I'm just telling them we're going to put a great big sign in the middle of the street, and then everybody will show up.
Yeah.
We have five billboards that are...
Yeah, it's going to be blocking the McDonald's.
I just talked to Curry Gill. The only thing I'd add, she's the state historical CLG grant person, and she's aware now that Gloria and I are just starting to form this historical landmarks committee for the fine, and so she's got us on her radar and all that. So
she's wonderful, a lot of energy.
Mm-hmm. And so we have, you know, there's already been an inventory of historical landmarks. I believe there's missing a few. I mean, it's just the cemetery and a couple other ones. There's a couple cemeteries. There's a Maston cemetery that dates back to the late 1800s. Our city cemetery is on the Landmarks Commission, you know, radar with the state. But very few in Southern Deschutes County, and I think there's a few that we might work together to add on to that, and so she's ready for our input. So the Grange, for one, that was 1910 right there, so I think it's just over 50 years they can designate, but it's quite a process to get a building or piece of property designated on it. But that's what we'll be working on. So, that's all I've got. Anybody else have anything else? We've got a TAC meeting starting in 10 minutes at 6 o'clock.
Public comments?
And any public comments, Adele?
Very productive meeting, as usual.
Thank you. And Dawn, right now you're the only other public person?
Well, I'm learning a lot. That's why I've been coming to these meetings, to find out something.
Good. So are we. All right, if that's it, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
I so move.
I second it.
Seconded. We are adjourned at 5:54.
Homework assignment on science.
Okay,
yeah. Excuse me, 5:49.
Can I take pictures of the ones we like? No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. Well, lots of adults. As you travel around, the best thing you can do is just take a lot of pictures of things.